Coming up in a moment, James Gilliland is an internationally known speaker, minister, visionary, author of two books, Reunion, The Source, and Becoming Gods Too. He is the director of the Self-Mastery Earth Institute, ESETI, if you will, enlightened contact with extraterrestrial intelligence. After a near-death experience, he returned with what he refers to as an interdimensional mind, that is to say, the ability to move beyond the body, personality, and other planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse. This includes the ability to experience different timelines and future probabilities. He is dedicated to the awakening of all of humanity and the Earth, as well as engineering and ushering in new healing and Earth-friendly technologies. He's a very interesting guy. He's been seeing UFOs and helping other people see UFOs for a very long time now, so he's just the right guy to have on with this incredible UFO flap we've got going on around the world right now. In a moment, James Gilliland. I guess James qualifies as a fairly frequent guest on Coast, and the reason for that is he's very, very interesting. James, welcome to the program, back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me on again, Art.
Absolutely. Good to have you, and it's good to have you we're right in the middle of this giant UFO flap. I haven't been able to say that in years. You know, we went through a lot of quiet years, James, but they are back in force. We're getting sightings all over the place. What do you think?
I think in our last interview I talked about this, that it was up and coming, and that the real disclosure was going to come from the sky, not so much from the ground, although I totally commend the work doing, you know, the people are doing the disclosure work on the ground and opening the door for that. But the real support for that work and the real disclosure is actually going to be coming from the skies, and it's going to increase exponentially.
When? Well, first of all, it's increasing right now. So is what's happening right now what you're talking about?
No, it's going to continue to increase. It's going to get even more and more and more so until it's just going to be undeniable around the world.
Okay. Why now, James?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the shift that we're going through right now. It's part of our evolutionary process to join the rest of the universe. And, you know, they're very concerned at where we're going right now, especially with the wars and the nuclear problems. And
you say this as though you speak for them, do you?
Well, I would say I speak for, you know, all humanity and all life. You know, they're just the greater family of man, you might say. I don't like to have any handles, but you might say I'm kind of an ambassador.
Okay. Well, then let's say that, if in fact it's true. Have you been in direct communication with them?
Yes, I have.
Then that qualifies you, I guess, as an ambassador. This communication is ongoing now?
It's ongoing. It's been going on for 10 years intensely, probably about 15 years. And I had contacts ever since I was a child, but I didn't really understand the nature of the contacts until later on.
You had an NDE, right?
Yes.
Near death?
Yes. That seemed to open the door for these contacts. And after the near-death experience, there's about probably 30 years of intense training, meditation techniques, and training with yogis and lamas, and a lot of inner sensitivity training classes and ministerial classes as well.
Okay. What is it that's going on in the history of our planet right now? And as far as mortals are concerned, it's a long history, that is bringing it to what you believe to be a peak and disclosure, as you put it, from the sky.
Well, what's the history that we're taught in school is just a mere blip, you know, in the history of humanity, because we've been around for almost 28 million years, and a lot of your guests have been pointing to this. They've been finding, you know, all kinds of artifacts. Some of them are 50 million years old, you know, gold chains and coal and things of that nature. So we've been around for quite a long time, and the Earth has gone through many cataclysms where we pretty much had to start over as primitives, or the Earth was reseeded. So there's been a colonization program and a reseeding program going on Earth for quite a few million years. It doesn't just go back to the you know, the 6,000 years that the Bible's trying to tell us, you know.
All right. When let's define they. If you are an ambassador for them, who specifically are they?
There's a lot of different groups here. Some of the photos on your website show just some of the diverse groups, but some of them come from the Andromedas. They come from the Arcturus system. They come from the Orion system, the Pleiades system. Those are probably the most well-known, is the ones from the Pleiades system. And there's many, many systems. I think it's Alpha Centauri, and there's the Zetas, which are getting the most press, the little grays with the black eyes, and I tend to avoid that group.
What is that group? There's a lot of controversy about what grays are. Little biological engineered bots of some sort, or independent intelligence of some kind, or what do you say grays are?
I think there's different groups of grays. There's a lot of hybridization going on, and there's some tall grays, which I think are the ancient, the original ones, and then a lot of the other ones are little EVs that are running around. They're just biological robots performing certain tasks. So that's where a lot of the abduction phenomenon comes from, and a lot of the other contacts.
All right, and why are the abductions going on? What is it they're trying to learn from the abductions?
Well, mainly that group is dying. They're atrophying. They went straight into knowledge, and they didn't care about their physical bodies or emotions, and they actually bred emotions out of their race. So they have very large heads and very small necks, and the rest of their body is very spindly. And they made a serious mistake in their evolutionary process, you might say, because emotions are the life force. It's what, you know, keeps everything together. It's like the cosmic glue, you might say. So they made a serious mistake there, and so they're trying to breed emotions and a stronger vehicle again, you know.
Okay, when you say breed, does that mean when somebody is abducted, they become part of some sort of breeding experiment ongoing?
Pretty much. It's been going on for a long time, probably over 500 years, but it's tailoring off right now. You're not hearing too much of it going on anymore because the benevolents are coming in and it's, you know, coming to a close.
You're right about that. I don't mean to interrupt, but you're really right about that. We have not had much in the way. We're certainly having a giant UFO flap,
mm-hmm.
but we're not getting an abduction flap. I'm not hearing about abductions. I mean, look, we went through past years where abduction after abduction after abduction. I interviewed, as you know, one very interesting abductee recently, but other than that, there hadn't been much going on with abductions. Have they given up?
Well, they've pretty much gotten what they needed, and the more benevolent ones are coming in, so it's part of our evolutionary process that, like, in the beginning, there's an old saying, the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you connect, and so, you know, we still are pretty primitive and warlike race, and so the first contact, we had a choice on whether to align with some very benevolent ones, but we had to choose universal peace and come together as a planet and start working on, you know, restoring our environment and things of that nature. Those were the guidelines. And another group came in and said, well, hey, we'll just give you the technology. Let us, you know, grab a few people and do a little testing. And so, unfortunately, some of our governments and some of other governments as well actually aligned with the ones that weren't so benevolent. And that didn't go real well. So that phase is closing out right now. And we're entering a whole new phase of more benevolent contacts and very spiritually and technologically advanced beings that are coming to the planet. But you're just not hearing about that. It's very suppressed.
Why? Why are we not hearing about it? And they're contacting what, individuals?
Well, what they're doing now is they've broken away from contacting governments, because they found the motive there and the consciousness and the energy just isn't right.
Can you blame them?
No. You know, we have that old story, you know, why don't they land on the White House lawn? You know, well, there's really no intelligent life there, so they're seeking it out in some other areas. You know, but...
I actually, I laugh, but... I'm sorry, that does make some sense. If the initial deal was, look, mm-hmm. we'll give you some technology, a government's going to jump on that. What do they want in return? A few citizens. Mm-hmm. Hey, no problem.
Oh, yeah. And you know, in those days, there's the Cold War going on, and there was a lot of threat, you know, nuclear threat, things like that. So basically, whoever had the best technology wins the war. So they took that route, you know, in the interest of national security.
That's what governments do.
Exactly. But nowadays, you know, in the interest of national security, we really need to choose peace and align with these benevolent ones and get rid of these weapons of mass destruction, you know, the real
ones. James, I'm with you all the way, but, buddy, I just don't see it happening, and I don't see it. Certainly, it's not happening now if you
yeah.
look around the world. And as far as the future is concerned, I would love to see it happen, but, and I hate to be cynical, but we don't seem to be moving that way.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a little push in that direction here because, you know, we've shot a few things up and they just come right back down to the ground. And, you know, we've had missile silos totally decommissioned and by the
UFOs. That is true.
And so, you know, they've made it pretty clear that they're not going to allow us to have any kind of an exchange. So it's kind of for naught. All these, you know, Star Wars and defense programs and everything else is just money down the toilet that we should be putting towards our infrastructure and, you know, cleaning up, you know, the Katrina mess there and you know, rebuilding levees and things of that nature. It's we have no business spending trillions of dollars right now on these other projects when we have a big mess at home to take care of.
Well, again, governments are what they are.
Yeah.
They act in the larger national interest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like going lion hunting with a pea shooter. you know, it's like, you know, it's wiser not to, you know, take your pea shooter out and antagonize the lion. And that's kind of what we're doing because some of these beings are millions, if not billions, of years ahead of us.
Okay, let's try this one, James. Look, everything says that with physics as we know it, there is no way that they could travel to us from wherever they might be coming from. There wouldn't be enough time to get here with traditional physics. So how are they doing it?
Well, the problem is that I think the key is physics as we know it, but there is physics that we do know right now, especially quantum physics, that explain exactly how they do it. And there's a thing called instantaneous communication, that things travel and communicate instantaneously. And I think it's Niels Bohr came out with a lot of this information, and they've been proving it. So you can go up to the next step to instantaneous travel, and you don't have to travel long distances like we think we do. You know, they can actually just punch in the destination, hit a button, and bam, they're there. So it's instantaneous travel, you might say, and they have that kind of technology. And the best way to explain it is to understand the nature of the ships, because some ships are physical, some ships are energy, and some are more like light ships as you move up the vibration continuum, and then there's some ships that are pure consciousness. And as you power your ship up and move up in the frequencies, you're not so limited as to travel and, you know, all the other capabilities. So you can actually travel instantaneously by moving your ship out of this physical reality into an energy or a light reality or even beyond that and just jump instantaneous wherever you need to be. And that's what they do. You can see a lot of the footage where the ships are there and then they just pop and they're gone.
I know.
And that's
how
they...
I was going to say a lot of what you're saying sounds like New Age gibberish, but...
Mm-hmm.
But it actually matches the reports of these objects that people keep giving. You know, it was there, it moved, it disappeared, it shot across the sky at an incredible speed, then just suddenly was gone, those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
As though it's coming and going from what we know as our reality.
Yeah, there's no way you could survive the G-force being inside a ship with conventional physics, you know. You know, they'd be splattered against the wall on the inside of the ship if they used the physics that we know of.
Okay, and all of this comes from direct knowledge and contact with extraterrestrials that you've had, yes?
Yes. Also, too, I actually hang out with some of the top minds on the planet. You probably know a lot of them because a lot of them have been on your show, and they've actually been up to the ranch. We had a big conference here in 2006, and you know, we had Dr. Sala, we had Alpha Rubre, Brooks Agnew. He was just on the show earlier with George Norrie. But
All of the people, excuse me, this is very important, I think, for the audience. This list of people, and probably a list much longer, that have come to your ranch have, in fact, backed you up. They've seen these things.
It's
not had communication as a result of this, right?
Yeah, Nick Bajic was up here. Wendell Stevens came up here. And, you know, during this conference, we had two massive ships. One came in from the north and one came in from the south, and they flew right over exactly when they said they would.
People you named would come on this radio program and back you up on that.
I would say 99% of them. There's one I'm not sure of. I don't want to mention his name because he's trying to keep some people just are working with in other fields of politics and science, and they don't really want to go public and talk about UFOs, just particularly one of them. But every one of the other ones will come on. I know last night I heard Brooks Agnew on the show with George Norrie, and he talked about his experience here, and he was actually hit by kind of a beam of energy that hit him right straight through the chest, and it lit him up entirely.
Right.
And he had all kinds of, like, maps and diagrams as his body lit up. Other people saw it as well. And
I know. That's, frankly, James, what makes all of what you say so interesting. I mean, it would be so easily dismissible as, you know, you seeing things or hearing things or whatever. But there's this long list of people, many who have come on the show,
and
you've brought them on in the past, and damn if they haven't seen these things. So there really is something here.
Yeah, last time we had some engineers here, some aerospace engineers, and one of them was in Skunk Works. And he came on the show, and I remember right in the middle of the show, one of the big ships flew in, and I guess you heard everybody screaming out in the field. And you said, can you bring them on? Can you bring them on? So they
That's
did.
That's right.
Yeah. And you know, we've had 30 of these engineers at a time. They come up here and, you know, bring a sack lunch and sit out and watch these ships come in.
Why your area?
I think this area has a long, long history of UFO activity. It goes back to the Native American lore. And Kenneth Arnold actually lost sight of the ships when they descended on the western slopes of Mount Adams, which is my front yard. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Greg Long, all of these people have written books about this area.
Yeah, very impressive. So you don't think it's necessarily you, James, although there's some aspect of that, but you think it's the area, right?
I think it's a combination of both. It's basically, if you rise to the occasion and develop yourself spiritually, they will find you. They'll contact you.
All right, hold it right there. We're at a break point, James. Now, folks, I really want to emphasize what I just said, and that is we could bring person after person after person on here, engineers, those kinds of people who will back up what James says. So it's not idle New Age blabber. These things really do appear. I'm Art Bell. Here I am, and I said it myself. Mike the Skeptic from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, says, hey, Art, actually, what your guest is saying is New Age nonsense and gibberish. There's no proof, no video, no video evidence, no official documentation, nothing. All he has is anecdotal speculation. A bunch of people who say they've seen something, it's worthless. Well, you know, if all I had was the word of James, I might feel the same way. But frankly, we have had aerospace engineers, people of all kinds of professional backgrounds that have been to his ranch, and they've seen these things, clearly, unambiguously have seen these things, person after person after person. Now, that means something. There's no question about it. Now, how many photographs does he have? In a moment, we will ask. By the way, Bob Crane called me from China the other day, two or three days ago, and boy, has he got some great news, which I cannot talk about. But it really is great news. Well, all right, James, welcome back. You heard what Mike, now there's nothing you can really do for skeptics. If you show them a slightly fuzzy photograph, James, they say, oh, another fuzzy photograph of a UFO. If you show them a crystal clear photograph, they say it's got to be a fake.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't win. But nevertheless, he asks, he says nonsense and gibberish, no proof, no video. And you say?
Well, you know, Einstein said condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. And there's a lot of people suffering from cognitive dissonance. They just, no matter how much proof or evidence you give to them, like you're saying, they just can't accept it. And really what they want to do is remain in their present state of mind. They don't want to change or be open to any new knowledge or new information. But we've got about 60 hours of footage of these things landing on the ground, morphing from one to four, back to one again. You know, 60 witnesses on the ground, you know, with their testimonies. It just goes on and on and on.
Where would you suggest they go? To your website? Where's the very best of what you've got?
Well, the website has a lot of it, but the DVDs have even more of it. And we have so much here that we haven't even had a chance to put up and make available yet, which we're working on right now. We just don't have the technology or the funding, as usual, to get it all up there because, you know, we're kind of a pretty small operation. We're just a ranch out in the middle of nowhere. But hopefully we can get all of it up. But we have just one after another, I don't know how many hundreds of ships coming in right on time. When they say they're going to come in, they power up, light up the entire sky, make a turn.
No, let me stop you. You say coming in when they say they're going to come in. Now, that means they communicate with you and let you know when it's going to happen?
Yes, they give us, we had ABC here, and they filmed it. And actually, we had Jay Leno's group came up here, and they haven't aired it yet, but they had their cameras rolling, the ships came in, and two of them came right at each other and turned and went off in different directions.
And they got that?
And they got it. They have it on film, and I gave them some other incredible film, but we haven't heard anything. It was supposed to be aired quite a while ago, and for some reason they canned it. Hopefully they'll bring it up again.
Did they give you a reason?
No. You know, they usually never do. It's funny because we get right to the edge of something taking off and being aired, and I know locally they air it. But as soon as it starts to go national, it gets canned.
Right.
You know, it's somebody steps on it and says, this is too real. You know, we can't have this out there.
Yeah, I know. This is too real. And that comes under the category of that's a clear shot, and so it's got to be fake. Unfortunately, we live in a day and age where if you're talented with Photoshop, for example,
you can
do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of unfortunate. Back in the days of Polaroid, you didn't have that opportunity, or at least not much of one.
No.
So it's almost harder to prove photographically now than it was then.
Well, I have the originals. So I have the original analog DVDs that I took a long time ago, and I have the mini DVDs, and everything is original. And I have the multiple witnesses that were there at the time these objects were filmed, so we can interview them at the same time. And, you know, either I have a whole army of liars here or something's going on. You know?
No, you don't have a whole army of liars. In fact,
yeah, I've heard people say that. You know,
a lot of these people are very credible.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
seen something, obviously.
Definitely.
And you know, let's move on a little bit. I'm going to just say, because of the number of witnesses you have, I'm going to accept that something real is going on there. There's simply no doubt about it, and we're not going to satisfy Mike the Skeptic at all.
No.
I would like to know what their ultimate agenda is. And rather than answer with there are many agendas, I mean, there's got to be some kind of general agenda that they have.
I think the general agenda right now is to assist us in our awakening and healing process. And you know, there are a couple other agendas there, but, you know, we're moving out of the old abduction, experimentation, and just sitting back and watching phase to even the ones that are just kind of observing you know, watching us are now starting to take an active role in assisting in this evolutionary process. And there's actually a lot of them coming from the inner Earth, the, you know, places beneath the Earth where they're based. And Carlos Diaz has some pretty good footage. And we have some footage. I put one of them up on your site there of a plasma ship. And those ships are actually, the beings are actually part of the ship.
And all right, hold on. I'm on the way up to the site right now. I want to see it. Where do I look?
Okay, that's on your
there
site.
There it is, right on the front page.
Yeah, on your site.
Okay.
It's one of the you know, plasma ships, you know, similar to the ones Carlos Diaz is taking down in Mexico. And I just got back from a trip to Mexico, and they're, you know, when you go down there, you talk about UFOs, and they go, what's the big deal?
I know.
They go, we see them all the time. You know, they're part of our culture.
They are part of the culture.
And it's just no big deal. I went and did a talk down there and just flooded the place, and I showed them all the UFOs, and they go, well, that's nice. And when I showed them all the paranormal stuff we have, they're really excited about that, you know.
So they like that better than the UFOs. UFOs are old hat to them. Right?
Exactly. You know, they're really more into the paranormal photos and the other things that
the Mexicans have had so many sightings. The Mexicans have had collisions with their commercial aircraft.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing what's happened in Mexico. And so it's no surprise that that's kind of their attitude, James.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think it's so crazy down there?
Well, Jaime Masson and Santiago Uriaga both have done an excellent job of documenting this, and there's others as well. Those are just two I know personally. But I think that many of the ancient ruins down there were actually built by them, and they're returning to those areas. And I think one of the main things down there is nobody's shooting at them, you know. You know,
that may be an excellent point, actually, James.
Yeah, I mean, the ships that come here, we have on our website, we actually have, you can see black helicopters that are not normal helicopters. We've got black F-15s. We have chases here constantly. And it's kind of a no contest, because these ships will come in and they could either just leave the jet in the dust, or they just vanish and the jet goes by and they reappear.
Do you think our official policy, James, is to fire at these craft?
I do believe it is. It may be changing because of a lot of the work with the exopolitics groups, and it depends on which base commander is involved. Some of them say just observe it, you know, don't fire on it, just observe it. And others, you know, might say go ahead and fire on it. And I don't know what the exact official policy is, but it is to greet them with aggression. And
well, since you get to speak with them or communicate with them, James, mm-hmm. what is their official reaction to being shot at?
They just said, we'll come back again, you know.
We'll come back again.
Yeah, they just said, you know, silly people.
When you're in
primitive.
A better mood, huh?
Yeah. But, you know, it's sad, because you think about these beings that are very, very spiritually advanced beings and technologically advanced. You know, they've overcome disease, war, you know, all of this. They have the technology to restore our environment and clean everything up here. And you know, when they come here, we fire on them and try to shoot them down, dissect them, and back-engineer the technology for the war industry. So, you know, people say, well, why aren't they landing at the Super Bowl, or why aren't they landing on the White House lawn? Well, there's your answer. You know, they are communicating with a lot of the common people now, and they're having contacts all over the world right now, and a lot in Mexico. There's a lot of contacts going on in Mexico. But they're contacting a lot of the common people that are, you know, have pure intent, an open mind, a loving heart, and they're not going to try to capitalize on it or turn it into a religion or something.
So you think, there's that danger of it being turned into a religion. You think they've virtually then given up on governments?
It seems that way. I know there are some still working with governments, and there are some governments that are actually being contacted. We're not hearing about it yet. But a lot of governments are actually blowing the lid off it. I think France is releasing a lot of their information, Brazil, Mexico definitely. it seems a lot of the other countries are saying, okay, enough of the cover-up. You know, we have to start bringing this information out. And you know, even people within the Black Project are starting to release a lot of information, and they're kind of, you know, shooting it out through different avenues.
Even the skeptics, it seems to me, James, have got to wonder. I mean, the most dramatic encounters, the most dramatic landings or shoot-downs, including Roswell,
mm-hmm.
You would think these records would be carefully maintained, and yet they are strangely disappeared. And this happens in case after case after mm-hmm. case. When Congressman Schiff went after the records, they were, I forget what the official response was, something about they were all destroyed.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Well, this happens once maybe, but again and again and again, no way. So obviously our governments know a great deal more than they have told us.
Oh, they definitely do. Paul Hillier, who was the Canadian former defense minister, he was at the Hawaii conference where I spoke. And after I gave my presentation, he came up and he shook my hand. He goes, thank you so much. He goes, that was very enlightening. And he just loved all the information I was giving him, the different types of beings and why they're here. And, you know, he
run over that for all of us, the different types of beings and why they're here. I'd like to hear that myself.
Well, there's a lot of different types. Some are very similar to us. You couldn't tell the difference if they were walking down the street, unless you're very sensitive. You'd feel a frequency or an energy if you're around them.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of them look just like us. As a matter of fact, they're our ancestors returning that, you know, some stuck it out here and a lot of them took off when the cataclysms came and they had the technology to do so. So there's beings that now on your page, again, if you go
Before you go on, you just said something I want to explore a little bit. You said before the cataclysms came, right?
Yes.
Okay. You seem to feel that... if we were to suddenly go berserk and get into a nuclear conflict of some sort,
mm-hmm.
they would step in and prevent it.
They would prevent that, but we've also got some bigger challenges coming, and that's the form of Earth changes.
I think
your book has covered a lot of that.
I know. But I guess where I'm going with this, James, is why would they step in and prevent either a man-made or non-made cataclysm in our near future, and yet not prevent past cataclysms?
I think before understanding the planet, there's some things that they were just too big and they couldn't deal with them. It's a whole planetary thing, like a pole shift or something of that nature that was beyond their technology. You know, all they could do is just either go underground or leave. And so in the past, but... I know for a nuclear exchange, they could step in on that really easy, and they've demonstrated that they could render almost everything we have inert. It'd never even get off the ground.
Well, they've sort of demonstrated that, both in Russia and here in the U.S.
Yes.
And those are stories in themselves. But, you know, what about something like global warming, the rising sea levels, the disappearance of important things like bees and birds beginning to die off, and all these horrid problems we have going on now, they don't sound trivial to me.
No, they aren't. They definitely aren't. And actually, they are very concerned, especially the ones that are based here, because, you know, they're sharing the water and the air and everything that we're sharing as well. And they're very upset, especially when we're, you know, blasting nuclear bombs off and, you know, shaking their heavens, you might say. But, you know, they're extremely concerned. And that's why you're seeing a lot of these plasma shifts right now, because they're coming out and they're looking at the surface dwellers, and they're keeping a very close eye on what we're doing to the environment and to each other as well.
All right. A lot of people are going to look at what you call this plasma ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grainy and it's kind of fuzzy. And they're going to go, oh, come on.
Mm-hmm.
What did you take that to? Is that taken with video?
No, actually, that was taken with a Sony, a really nice Sony camera. It was pretty high up, and so that's a blow-up of it.
Right.
But now the problem with these ships that you're going to see over and over again, even on my site where I have a lot of ships that look very similar to the O'Hare ships, is that they have an energy field around them. And they're very, very hard to photograph because of the ionization field around the ship. And to get a very clear photo of a ship, usually it needs to be parked.
You're absolutely right. Anything that is very, very bright against a very dark background and is far away and you've got to zoom in, you're going to end up with just exactly what you've got right here.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the last conference, we had people just shooting out in the field, and they didn't see anything when they got their film back. You know, they had the ships showing up on the film. So it's a lot of times they can actually make themselves invisible to our, you know, we can only see so much of the visible light spectrum, and a lot of times they're just outside of that.
That's right.
But the cameras will actually get them because, you know, the camera has the capability of going beyond our ability to see in the visible light.
All right, well, let's do something for the skeptics. And I get this all the time, James. Since you do it on a regularly scheduled basis, that is to say, have them show up and demonstrate, mm-hmm. if a person wanted their own contact, if a person, a skeptic, let's say, even a skeptic, wanted contact, how would they go about it?
You know, I would say dump the skepticism, you know, would be the first thing. because, you know, that these beings are extremely telepathic, and they come and they scan the consciousness of the group, and then they determine how low they're going to come, because if people aren't ready for it, if there's a lot of fear and a lot of skepticism and negative energy, they'll just take the high road, and you'll see them up high, but they won't drop down. But if you get a good focused group that has pure intent, open mind, loving heart, and they put the intent out there that they just want to know, they want to know the truth, and these things drop right down in. And, you know, the most powerful ones are the kids.
Here's an interesting. In the first hour, I had a fellow who said he had this, what he called a yellow star.
Mm-hmm.
He was very anxious, wanted to contact it, so he started flashing his car lights.
Uh-huh.
And this thing approached him as though it knew that it understood he wanted contact. And so along it came.
And he ran.
Well, no, he didn't run, actually. He ran and got his brother and uh-huh. demonstrated it for his brother who
yeah.
saw it.
Yeah.
So is that normal? In other words, this whole thing is by mind reading, by intent?
Well, there's different ways. We actually have lasers here that we shoot up to them and let them know, you know, we're here. We have other really high-powered lights that we use sometimes to signal them. I had a woman here and a couple doctors here. One was a dentist and one was an MD.
Right.
And she's actually given testimony on the show. She's called in and talked about it. But we had a big ship come in just over the trees, and I had a spotlight on it. Her name's Mona Lay, if you hear from her. But
okay.
We did an interview. She actually came on the show. I think you interviewed me when she came on the show. And
that's right.
I drew a big triangle in the sky with this light. And this ship actually morphed into a triangle. It turned into a big triangular light.
Yeah, this is much of the same kind of thing that Stephen Greer does mm-hmm. with groups. And it works. Hold on, James. James Gilliland is my guest. And, you know, you can be a doubter and a skeptic if you wish. But the fact of the matter is, person after person has given us testimony that it's real. What does it mean? I'm Art Bell. Once again, James Gilliland. James, welcome back. On making your own personal contact,
mm-hmm.
how would you recommend? All but a skeptic. A skeptic is never going to make the transformation. But for the rest of everybody out there, if they want to give this a try,
mm-hmm.
What do they do?
You know, I think it would be awesome, Art, to do one of your experiments.
uh-huh.
I know you hate those. But, you know, if the whole collective consciousness just focused a very loving, joyous thought out there and put the call out that, you know, we do want to make contact, we do want help with our planet, you know, to help clean up the environment and to bring these new technologies in. And if they put pressure somehow on the government to stop shooting at them and create a peaceful avenue of exchange, we'd have some pretty amazing things happen here on the planet.
Well, let's ask you this. If we had an original deal with them, in other words, take some citizens, do your experiments, share the technology with us, where did all that go down the tubes? If that's no longer the deal, We're not getting the technology, and they're no longer taking people, and we're certainly not getting reports of abductions to speak of. Then where did the deal go wrong?
Well, from my understanding, I'm not an expert in the abduction end of it and the Black Project and all the hidden bases and everything that's going on, but I'm aware of them, and they do exist. But obviously there was some kind of a skirmish. I've heard quite a few stories about it from very high officials, and I guess there was they took a lot more than was expected, and the experiments were going a little beyond what they expected, and so I guess there was some kind of a disagreement and a major breaking away of that deal. With me, I don't. I always say just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened, or just because you're an alien doesn't mean you're enlightened. And it's important to realize this, that, not all aliens really came here with our highest and best good in mind. And but that whole arena is being phased out right now. And the ones that are coming in now are the ones that have pretty much put a stop to that. So it's time now to start... keep your discernment, but let's start greeting these beings in peace and, see what they have to offer.
So you're convinced, you began the program by saying so, that a disclosure is going to come from the sky, that suddenly these sightings, even though they're increasing right now, will, go exponentially higher?
Yes, it's our destiny to join the rest of the universe in peace. And some of these beings I'm talking to are intently spiritual. They're very, very spiritual. And they talk about God, but they don't talk about the God that most of us believe in. They talk about more of a frequency, a force, a divine intelligence that's nameless. And they said that those energies are pressing hard on the earth right now. And
this
evolutionary process, or this quantum leap in evolution that we're going through, they're a part of that. They're part of the beings that are orchestrating, helping to orchestrate this event and get us through these times.
What they actually have not done anything yet that I'm aware of. I mean, you can't really point to anything and say, they cleaned this up, or they stopped that, or they... other than perhaps toying with our nuclear facilities as well as the Russians, I don't think you can point to anything they've done just yet, can you?
Well, in Chernobyl, there's a lot of engineers that they interviewed there in Chernobyl, and they said that there was a ship that came over Chernobyl, and their the Geiger counters were just going off the scale, and this thing sent two or three beams down into the reactor, and then their Geiger counters dropped significantly. And so something intervened there in Chernobyl, and it wasn't as disastrous as it could have been.
Where did you get that news?
Now, I've got that from, I can dig that up for me, but it was sent to me by an investigator that went there, and he interviewed some of the scientists there that were working on it.
And because that would be exactly what I just asked for. That would be proof of intervention. Did they get photographs or anything significant?
I don't know. All I know is that the guy interviewed, he took names and he interviewed the people down there, and he interviewed some of the main scientists that were there on site. And I'm sure you could probably Google it and find it, or I could dig it up again.
Okay. All right.
And bring it up.
That certainly would qualify as an intervention of sorts. A lot of people are worried about Chernobyl and whether the whether it's actually going to hold. I think there are a lot of predictions it will not. And you're saying they actually stepped in and killed some radiation.
Yeah, I mean, they can do that. They can render radiation inert and do all kinds of things. But the problem is that we have to gain the wisdom from our experiences. And until we learn to stop playing with this nonsense and there's other fuelless technologies. We don't even need these reactors. We don't even need oil right now. And it's been around for quite some time, and I've actually held this in my hand. Things exist.
Held what in your hand?
Well, a device that is about as big as a small pipe fan that has 9 coils, and each coil puts out 25,000 watts, and it's ice cold when it runs. But the physicist that created it had his lab burned, his family threatened, and it's on the shelf right now. But there's quite a few coming out. I mean, just basically splitting water, you know, and the hydrogen, burning the hydrogen and oxygen is those technologies are going to come out in force right now. It seems like almost everybody's inventing those. It's a pretty simple
technology. It's very interesting that you would mention that, James. Earlier today, I was talking to a 767 pilot, whose name I will not mention, but he told me that there's a man in the Philippines that's quite well known, and there are others around the planet right now that are actually running automobiles on water. There's some new type of electrolysis process separating the hydrogen extremely efficiently and then running cars on water. And I know that sounds like, well, I don't know what it sounds like. Sounds crazy. But,
well, you know, it's on demand right now. They have it set up so it runs on your car, splits the water on demand. And that technology has been around for a while, but it's been suppressed, you know, like the other technologies. You know, even the electric cars, if you put one of these other devices on an electric car, you could drive the wheels off it. But, you know, if we want to get a little more unlimited, you don't even need wheels because these devices, when you rev them up, they become counter-gravity.
But, James, I don't get it. If somebody really has something like this, even if they have a car that will run on water, what am I saying, even? If they've got something of that sort, why not? I'm accessible. Why not come to me and say, all right, here it is, a car that runs on water. And I would look into it, or I'd get somebody even more knowledgeable to look into it. And if it was real, I'd be blasting the word all over the planet. And I'm not the only one. They could go to any number of sources, 60 Minutes, any of the big programs, and say, here it is. Here's a car that runs on water.
Yeah.
And that's a big story, James.
Well, you know, Gene Maloff, I think he, you know, was going to testify before Congress about all these new technologies, and they found him bludgeoned to death in his home right before he could do it. So there's a lot of people out there that there's one or two ways it goes. Either they buy it and shelve it, and you know, you never hear about it from these people again, or they get two options. You know, they disappear and their families disappear with them. So those are the two options right now. And you know, we really don't have any legislation or anybody that's going to watch over these people or provide the security necessary to get these technologies out. That's the main problem.
When you get communication from them, James, in what form does it come? I mean, is this completely mental? You just get thoughts in your head, or what?
We usually have to go into kind of a meditative state and calm my mind, and I rise up. It's more of an emotion, and you focus on, like, love and joy and bliss, and you start merging with that energy, and then a communication starts coming. You have to rise to their frequency, and they will drop down a little bit. And so you kind of meet them halfway. And it's thought to thought is what it is. And the interesting thing is that when they give me the information, we'll be out there with the cameras, and they're saying we're coming at 9 o'clock. And right at 9 o'clock, they're there, and the cameras are rolling, and we have them on film. And just two nights ago, we have this place on the ranch. If you park your car there, it drains your battery. I don't know why, but everybody that parks there, you come out a few hours later and your battery's dead. So it's kind of like that Skinwalker Ranch. We have some pretty strange things here, but it's mostly positive. We don't have any real high strangeness. It's weird, but it's benevolent. And
why then are there so many reports that come from people who have had one contact, a form of contact or another, and more than not, it's negative?
I think the main problem is that the positive experiences don't get any press. It's like, you know, they say that, you know, the lie can travel, you know, twice around the world before the truth has time to, you know, tie its shoes.
Boy,
and
that's no lie.
Yeah, and everybody really wants to capitalize on the fear and suspense, and, you know, Hollywood gets billions of dollars to, you know, work off of that. So it's kind of sad. All the movies are programmed negatively, and even here in this area here, there was a lot of contact even before I got here. And each case, when you read the encounter, the people either jumped in their car and sped off or they ran. And nobody really had the courage to just stand and say, what's up, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, why are you here? And that's what I've been doing, and I've been helping others to diminish the fear so they can actually have a closer experience. You know, it changes your life totally. When you see something, you know, just from a distance, it puts you in a state of shock almost. And when they start coming in really close, I mean, people just freeze. You know, it takes them a while to come out of it.
Well, again, Steve Greer, Dr. Greer, has mm-hmm. been using flashing lights, other things to attract them, to cause them to come closer, to initiate contact. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing that for years, and it works. And it's kind of the same sort of thing you're doing. You're using, you said, lasers.
Yeah.
So would you recommend that to an individual, aside from intent? Mm-hmm. You know, you want contact. You're trying to rise to a higher level. I can buy into all of that. And then these flashing lights are things that you do to attract them. As the caller in the first hour I had, he said suddenly it came closer. That's mm-hmm. no surprise to you, I guess, right?
No, we do that constantly. You know, we use lights or lasers, or it's, you know, mainly they know what's going on. If they're so advanced, they just scan your consciousness and they know what you're up to. But the flashing lights are giving them a signal that, hey, you know, I want an experience. I want to see this closer. You know,
maybe it's just part of the intent. You're demonstrating something. So
mm-hmm. Well, Stephen Greer actually came out here and he did his training. You know, the ambassador training here. And we filmed three large triangles, and we lost count on how many ships came in. There's probably 30 ships came in while he was here. So he's very well aware of the activity here, and his group is as well.
Okay. You've got a place where things are going on. Are people able to come to your ranch? I know you can't have giant mobs descending on you.
No.
But what do you do when people, you know, send you email, phone you, whatever they do to get in contact with you and say, look, I want the experience. I want to mm-hmm. come and see for myself.
Well, it depends. We have just three rooms that we have for rent here if people want to come up, you know, and spend some time here. But a lot of people camp, and I recommend camping. You know, we just had an event here in August, and we had over 400 people here. And I actually built a conference building to have, you know, the speakers come. And one of the main reasons I built this place is because I was being censored everywhere else, you know.
Censored?
Yeah, pretty much. You're well aware of this. In the UFO community, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of, you know, backstabbing. And And when somebody comes by and they really have the goods and they really can go interdimensional and bring out, you know, a lot more of the truth, you might say. There's just a lot of jealousy and a lot of problems that come out from
okay, how much of that have you run into? How much jealousy and anger and backstabbing and problems have you run into because of what you're doing?
I would say a lot. I would say much more of that than the positive, you might say. Lately it's changed, though, because a lot of the things we're doing were way ahead of their time and people are catching up now. So there's a lot more support in this, and what's sad is that the majority of the people are really good people. Wherever you go, just but when you move up the echelon into the higher levels or the other people that have a gig that they have going, you know, and they want to focus mainly on nuts and bolts or on abductions or they want to make everything evil. All those groups, they get very upset when you step on their toes and you say, look, there's a lot more going on. There's something far beyond, you know, this scenario, and so it's
why do you think ufology eats its young this way?
You know, I gave a talk at the International UFO Congress there in Laughlin, Nevada, and that was one of the subjects I brought up. And you know, I told everybody, I said, nobody has the whole pie here. We all have a piece of the pie, and we're never going to get to the bottom of this until we put the whole pie out on the table and learn to cooperate and get along. And I got a standing ovation there, you know, just by saying that, because people are tired of it. People are saying, look, you know, how are we going to get along with these beings that are so much different than we are, and we can't even get along with each other? And it's very sad when you think about it, because, you know, like the photos I put on your site, some beings look like we do, and then if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see another being there that has a robe, and his face looks pretty bizarre looking, and he's a very ancient one, very wise. And these beings step out of these plasma fields, they're interdimensional beings for contact, and most people would see them and would run because they can't sense the energy coming from them. They can't sense that they are extremely wise and loving and very powerful beings. So until we learn to accept, differences, that there are not just different colored beings on this planet, there's different colored beings on other planets, and some of them look totally different than we do. Some are very tall, some are very short. There's all kinds of different beings out there.
Here's something I've learned, James. Maybe it'll enlighten you with respect to the flack you're getting, and that is I don't participate in news groups. And the reason I don't is because they always start out with the very best of intentions. No matter what the subject is, it doesn't matter. They start out so well, but inevitably, as time goes on, and this is an absolute golden rule, it's just never broken. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good the topic is for the news group, it degenerates into personal attacks until finally whoever's running the news group can't stand it anymore, then throws somebody off or throws several people off who are perceived to be causing trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, that causes a fight because somebody says, well, that's censorship and you can't do that. Well, the person did it because they finally couldn't stand it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this just happens always, James. So when you get to a topic like ufology, which is already difficult, you're going to get that times 10.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a chat group that was attached to my website, and I canceled it.
Yeah, but there you go.
Very reason, I just said, this is so ridiculous, and I wasn't there to monitor it. And
yeah.
I had people posting all kinds of nonsense on there and fighting and bickering, and I just said, you don't deserve this room. I'm canceling it.
People prefer, ultimately, the negative. And until we get away from that, I don't think contact, if it's benevolence, going to happen. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. I've got to admit, it's tempting. What James said earlier, it's really, really tempting. It's been a long time since I did an experiment. I wonder if we could safely engage perhaps millions of minds and produce a vision in the sky. I wonder if we would target a city, or we'd go for the whole U.S. It's really something to think about, isn't it? If intent is what drives them, in quotes, and or brings them, then we could sure produce a lot of intent with just one more experiment, couldn't we? I'm trying to sit here and imagine how it could go wrong and reasons why we ought not do it. But if it's just to produce a mass sighting, then maybe. We'll be back in a moment. All right, let's play with the idea a little bit. James, if we decided to do an experiment, if we decided to attempt to engage perhaps millions of minds toward producing a really big event in the sky, would you target a specific area? Would you just send out a sort of a general message of intent that we're ready for a big show? Or how would you do it? I'm curious. If we were to do such a thing, how would you want it done?
I'd do it globally and then just watch the internet for all the reports to come flying in. It's just going to be exponential. I know they've been telling me between November and December there's just going to be no more doubt whatsoever. I mean, you'd have to be either in total denial or total ignorance to not know what's going on, because they're going to be seen everywhere.
Do you think there would be a response to something like that?
Definitely I do. If people went out there and just meditated and went out and had some clear skies and just put the intent out there that, you know, send as loving thought as you can and put it out there and just say, you know, help. You know, I really want to experience this.
Yeah. Do you see any downside to this?
I don't anymore. In the past, that was a possibility, but now there's anything negative is being very monitored and watched, and if it's here at all, most of it's been given eviction notice, you might say. So.
Well, you remember the movie and all those people at the top of the building welcoming the aliens who got fried?
Yeah, there goes Hollywood again, you know.
Yeah, well, a potential downside. I mean, are you sure enough that the mass number of visitors that we have right now are benign or have our best interests in mind?
You know, I have no doubt. One of the things that we have to realize is, first of all, there's nothing we can do about them because they're so far advanced. You know, even our military, they know that. There's nothing we can do about it. And B, if they wanted to do something about us, they would have done it so long ago because they've been around since, you know, thousands and thousands of years. They're in the frescoes, you know, they're in rock paintings. They're, you know, there's legends that go back, God knows how many, I mean, what, 400,000 years or so. So, you know, the Chinese talk about them. They're in every culture, you might say. The ancient Egyptians talked about them. Tibetans talk about them. In the Vedic scriptures, they talk about the ships and the different types of ships. And
you're convinced they appear because of intent.
It is. You know, we have to rise to the occasion if we're going to join the rest of the universe. And if there was a collective consciousness that was trying to rise to the occasion, was initiating this, I'm sure that you would see a definite quickening in what is happening on the planet as far as, you know, the assistance to get us through these times we're moving into.
Are you sure that it would not be better spent focusing on some specific geographic area, or would you'd rather see it global?
You know, I'd rather see it global. You know, it's kind of what I find with them is trying to control them is just doesn't work. And you let them appear to you how they want to appear, and they have much higher oversight than we do. So they'll decide, you know, how they're going to do it and when they're going to do it. It's the same thing here. I've learned that, you know, I want them to come down with my camera and walk on the ship and interview them personally. I mean, that's my desire. And they say, you know, it's not time yet. You know, you'd be surrounded with military. You'd be probably in jail. And, you know, they said it just isn't going to work that way. You have to be patient. It has to be done a little at a time. So if we put the intent out there and send as much love and joy and bliss to them and be sincere and just say, you know, I just want to see a ship. I want to know this is real. You'd be surprised what will start moving around in the heavens or lighting up or you know, sometimes it'll happen when you least suspect it, but it will open the door for that to happen.
I'm really desperately trying to think of what the downside to this might be because I'm actively considering giving it a try, James.
I think the downside is a lot of ignorance would fall on its face.
Well, that's certainly not a downside from ufology's point of view.
Yeah, well, the downside that a lot of newscasters would have egg on their face and a lot of military people would go, damn, now we have to tell them the truth.
That would be if our government has been hiding all of this, and in fact, if at any point the government cooperated with them and allowed them to take citizens randomly and experiment on them, the repercussions of that would be politically horrible, James, just absolutely horrible.
Well, you know, we have to just move on. You know, that they had their reasons for doing it, and at the time we were, you know, on a war footage, and it was very dangerous times. And
we're always on a war footage.
Yeah, unfortunately, but you know, hopefully we've evolved far enough to where, you know, we can greet this with a little higher consciousness and civility and not be so primitive this time.
All right. I might give this a try, James. I'm going to allow a little time to pass, a day or so. I want to get some emails. I want some, there's a lot of good intellects out there, and it's been a long time since I've done one of these experiments. And if it could go wrong, I want to know how before I do it. So, folks, I am actively considering this. I really am, because not only James, but Stephen Greer, others who have had frequent contacts with UFOs, who have actually almost produced UFOs on demand for witnesses, good, reliable witnesses, it's all in intent. And what are our experiments if not intent? So I would like to know, anybody willing to email me on the downside of this and the reason why I ought not do it, do it now or forever hold your peace. I'm Art Bell at mindspring.com or Art Bell at AOL.com. So, James, I may give this a shot. And I don't do it lightly. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to want a report from you and, of course, reports from everybody else as well. But if they're really out there in force, and I guess you're convinced there are many, many craft. Is that correct?
Oh, there's flotillas out there. They've seen thousands of craft in the air in Mexico, all in one sighting. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're actually jockeying for parking space right now. So, you know, there's quite
jockeying
a few. They're gearing up for a major
space.
Event here.
All right. Are we able to detect them as our radar? We have these screens. We can track nuts and bolts in orbit around the Earth, that kind of thing. Our governments are well aware of all this, or they escape, they are invisible to that technology, or what?
You know, the governments around the world are very well aware of it, and a lot of radar is, you know, the I don't know what you'd call it, footage or the reports or radar are being released right now where they have followed these. Now, also, too, the majority of these ships, the higher ships, are stealth, and there's no way we would even know they were there. Nothing shows up on radar, and they'll just be parked right there, you know. So a lot of times there are no radar reports to, you know, coincide with undeniable sightings, and it's because of their technologies. They can take their ships and move them out of any frequency, so nothing would be able to grab onto them or just move right through them.
All right. If I do this, James, how would you recommend that I talk to everybody, to the audience, about how to aim their intent? Just loving, in other words, show yourselves, appear in our skies in a very loving way?
I think the first thing to do is just to settle down in your consciousness and just think of the most loving, joyous, blissful thought you can generate, you know, even if it's an old experience or a memory.
Yes.
And then kind of attach that to the intent of wanting to contact. And it's very important that the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you're going to connect. So if you have a lot of fear and a lot of religious training where you think everything's demonic or the devil or anything, I wouldn't even participate in this experiment.
Let's go ahead and touch on that. I've had a number of fast blasts about that, and there is that, James. In other words, you have contact. You have a lot of things that you've produced, a lot of witnesses, but how do you know in the end, James, how do you know that what's contacting you and what you're seeing is not demonic?
Well, mainly because I've had extensive training in this arena, and actually I've had extensive training in clearing any unseen negative influences, you know, which includes any kind of astral beings and what you call the shadow people, you know, and things of that nature. I've had many, many years of training in how to both sense that and clear that. And so just due to the overall training and working with lamas and yogis and other masters and even more even Christian-oriented people are moving in that direction. You know, I think Billy Graham calls them God's other angels. And Catholic Church now is saying these are not to be demonized. You know, this is just the greater family of man, and it gives, you know, better credence to the magnificence of God, you know, of the Creator, that, you know, creation extends far beyond the earth. So most of the religious factions, other than some of the, you know, we have fanatics, not just, you know, in the Muslim countries, but we have them right here on, you know, in good old America as well. And there's not too much you can do about that, because, you know, they're seeking the devil. They're seeking the negative. And that's, you know, I tell them, they said, how do I know? You know, they'll ask me, how do we know you're not working with the devil? And I said, well, the devil's not even in my mind. You're focused on the devil, you know, constantly. And so that's your experience. It's not even part of my reality. I don't.
If we sent out a giant blast of intent, which is what I'm contemplating, James, how quickly do you think it would be reacted to?
Probably almost immediately. You'd start to see things. You'd start getting all kinds of emails from people that, you know, mainly if people walked outside to clear skies and did this and put the intent out and just looked up in the sky for something anomalous to either power up or flash at them or start moving, you know, and it may come as close as you're ready to have the experience. You know, they'll scan you and say, well, this person's ready. You'll start having almost immediate call-ins. Just doing what we're doing right now with this going out to, I don't know, what, 15 million listeners. People are already thinking about this. It's in their mind.
I know.
And they're learning that, hey, there's a greater family of man out there that loves us, that wants us to get through these times, that's here to help us. Just knowing this is making that a possibility. It's giving them the reference points to start thinking about this and looking up and start, trying to experience this greater family of man. And that alone is going to help generate, you know, this reality.
All right, James, let's try it. And let's try it at the top of the hour. What I'm going to ask people to do is when we break here at the top of the hour, if you're able to go outside, that's fine. If the weather's nice and you feel like stepping out on your porch or stepping out into your yard and taking a look at the sky, that's fine. But what I really want everybody to do, beginning at the top of the hour and until we get back, is turn your radio off at the top of the hour. It'll take us, what, about 9 minutes, 8-9 minutes to get back, and that's long enough. I'd like everybody to just sit back, relax, clear your mind. As James said, perhaps contemplate an experience in your life that was joyous, that was happy. One of the happiest moments in your life. That'll be fun anyway. It's always kind of fun to sit back and relax yourself, remembering something that brought joy to you. Perhaps the day you had a child or the day you got married or whatever joyous occasion happened to you. Contemplate that so you're in a good mood. And then for as many minutes as you're able, combine that with a intent, a directed intent to them, whoever they are, to show themselves in our skies. We'll leave it at that. Show themselves in our skies. And if you want to go outside, there's going to be millions of other people doing this with you, folks. So if they're reactive, and certainly there's every reason to believe that intent is what does the trick, then we should be able to produce craft in our skies. Now, when I say our skies, that means the world's skies. It may, in your case, mean the skies directly over you or near you. So let's give it a try. It's a Saturday night. People should be in a good mood. And we have millions of people who can direct intent, very strong intent. And that means closing your eyes, getting in the mood I described, and then combining it with a very, very strong invitation to show themselves in our skies. It's worth a try. Let's see what happens. So we'll do that coming up at the top of the hour, James. There's an experiment for you, buddy. What do you think?
It sounds awesome. Made my evening.
Okay. I really, you know, I thought about it, and we're only asking for a kind of a show in our skies. So I'll do it. I'll go out and give it a shot myself, James. beginning as we break here at the top of the hour. I don't frequently ask people to turn their radios off. Believe me, it's the last thing a talk show host wants to do, but this is worth a shot. And then we'll see, I suppose, over the next days or even hours, if something happens. How about that?
Sounds awesome. I think it's going to be an incredible experiment.
Mm-hmm. It will be. I don't know if it will occur right away, if it will occur as we direct the intent, or if there'll be a delayed reaction by a few days. But I would say if anything massive should occur in either tonight or in the next few days, then we can probably chalk it up as another success. Have you ever done anything of this sort? Well, you've done it on more of a minor scale, right?
Yes, much more minor scale. And you know what's funny? Every time I've come on the show here, we've had Sky Watchers out there, and sure enough, we have some big ships drop right in, nice and low. The only problem is that nobody filmed it. They were just in shock. And I've been doing this for so long, I always get them on film. If I'm there, I get it. But a lot of the other people don't even lift their camera up for the first, you know, actually 30 seconds to a minute or even more.
Well, it's shock. If you happen to be lucky enough to have a camera with you, and I'm not suggesting that anybody out there, well, I'll tell you what, if you want to have a camera close by, fine, and maybe we'll get some photographs. But what I'm really after is a massive, massive number of sightings. Mm-hmm. So, James, I guess you're going to help us, right? You're going to be there yourself doing it?
Definitely. I've already put it out.
All right. We're coming up on the break. James, hold tight right where you are. Everybody else, you now have your assignment. We're going into break in about 20 seconds here, so I want you to relax, get yourself in a great mood. If you're able to, be outside safely. If not, where you are is just fine. You want to produce, remember, some joy in your life, get in a really good mood, and then blast out all the intent you've got inside you for them to show themselves in our skies. I will be participating with you. From the high desert, invitations going out right now. I'm Art Bell. Well, I surprised myself. I didn't think I'd do another experiment, but I did my part during the break, and I hope you did too. We'll see how it goes over the next day or so, the next few days. I expect there will be some giant sighting somewhere, if not in several areas. We're in the middle of a pretty good time for it anyway, but that much intent has got to produce something. We'll see. It may come. We have no way of knowing timelines, whether they really want to do it or not, but we certainly gave them the intent. And for those of you that participated with me, thank you. Don't stop. Keep it up. In the next hour or so, just keep blasting away intent, simply for them to show themselves. And as James mentioned, get in as good a mood as you can. I called up. You know what I called up? It's kind of interesting, actually. One of the joyous moments that I had in my life was the very brief but joyous OBE I had in Paris. And so I kind of called that to mind, remembered as much of it as I could, and sort of combined that with an intent to see something in our skies, for something to appear in our skies. And I hope you will do the very same, and we'll take a look in the next couple of days and see what happens. In a moment, we're going to open the lines for James Gilliland and see what you have to say. I'm Art Bell. Frankly, this was just too good to not do. I've had so many guests who have said that the appearance of these craft appears to be connected with intent. And as you know, intent is something that has fascinated me. Mass consciousness has fascinated me now for years. So we're going to watch the next couple of days very carefully. I'm already getting fast blasts that, I don't know what you make out of them. Helen in Kaiser, Oregon said, overcast, but I went outside, and yes, a round light was circling around the sky above my house. Happy to be part of it. Barry in Vancouver, intent experiment. Two craft sighted over Vancouver, B.C. at 105 a.m. Bright white lights moving north to south, 20 degrees above the eastern sky, and many more like that. But I don't know, James. We'll have to see what comes of it. We'll watch the next couple of days very, very carefully and see what happens.
I think you're going to get flooded.
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. I mean, if it is really intent, then we're going to find out. No question about it. Listen, we got a lot of calls for you, so what do you say?
Oh, it sounds great.
Here it comes. Kent in Michigan, you are on with James Gilliland.
Yes, Art. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Hey,
happy to have you.
I found your show by accident about 2 weeks ago, and I haven't missed one since. Anyway,
you.
I got a question for James.
Yes.
I was about 8, 9 years old. This would have been back in about 77, but we were out in the backyard playing, and I seen what I believe was a UFO. It was like a blue and a red oval lights that were slowly spinning, and it just kind of hovered there going real slow, and we saw it for about 15 minutes or so, and then it just shot up and disappeared. Have you seen anything like that?
Pretty much on a regular basis here. We see that
really,
quite often.
Really, the same kind?
Yeah, we do. We see a lot of different types. We've seen blue ones, purple ones, pink ones, green ones, you know, giant cylinders. We've seen triangles. We've got three or four of the massive triangle ships on film. Actually, I know, Art, you had one of those sightings, at least one.
I certainly did.
But we've got some really good footage of these ships, and people are trying to say that they're not satellites, that they're three satellites tethered together. But what we've
right.
seen here, there's no way it could be, because it turned around and went back the other way.
Yeah, they tried to tell me it was swamp gas. But
yeah, that was J. Allen Hynek's favorite.
Yep.
Favorite.
Okay, Kent, thank you very much. Listen, John and Lisa, and they give their last name in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania, say, my wife and I are regular listeners. We took part in your experiment. We went outside, and we saw two lights in the sky, just incredible. These are big white lights. Glad to be a part of this. Now, these are beginning to flood in, and I only, of course, you know, I only get samples, but I wonder what we've done here. Interesting. All right, I believe it's Solomon in Vancouver, B.C. Oh, Vancouver, you're on with James.
How are you doing, Art and James? As a matter of fact, I'm standing outside involved in the experiment, and I know that it's valid because 3 weeks ago I had a major vision that people all over the world were looking skywards, and there was all type of apparitions and UFO phenomenon taking place, but it had to do with the second coming of the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ. And I believe that very, very firmly. Also, Art, I was on with you about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I had made the prediction that your wife was going to have a baby girl. And and then 2 or 3 weeks later, I heard you on the air talking about the ultrasound, and congratulations on the young lady. A question I wanted to ask James. James.
Yes.
I've had contact since I was 3 years old. I've had contact with at least 24 different type of species.
Mm-hmm.
Three nights ago, here in Vancouver, as I'm standing outside, I was after I finished my meditation, intuitively I was told to come outside, and this beautiful white lotus light appeared over English Bay heading towards Vancouver. And I was listening to Art when he said just a few minutes ago the individual had fast-blasted him from Vancouver. I saw those two lights. Going across the heavens. One question I wanted to ask you. I speak an extraterrestrial language. Do you speak that? And number two, would you let
wait,
the
wait,
audience...
Wait, wait, wait. Solomon?
Yes.
If you speak an extraterrestrial language, say something.
All right, I will. And I want your listeners to concentrate on this, because every time I do it, everybody sees something different. But I'll do
proceed.
It now.
Proceed. Proceed.
Have you ever heard that before?
I have not, Solomon, and I am duly impressed. Have you, James, heard anything like that ever before?
You know, actually, I hate to admit it, but I have.
You have?
I try to stay grounded with all this, but I have words like that coming into my head. I have no idea what they mean, but they come with a feeling. And while he was speaking, I was getting some chills down my back.
Yeah, I have no idea. You know, that was out of the blue. I decided to ask him to say something. And, obviously, he was prepared. And it came out sounding not like any language I know, but sounding very specific and wow.
You know, most people just categorize this, you know, in the nutcase category. But, you know, unless you're sensitive and you have the inner sensitivity to spiritually discern, you know, some of these things. And I'm one of them. You know, people do stuff like this to me all the time. I go, well, that's really nice. Have a great day. But, I definitely felt an energy and a connection with that. And sometimes I hear that, but mostly my communication is thought to thought. And, I get the information very clearly. But there is this strange language, very, very similar to what he was.
Whatever he did,
about.
It was impressive, James. All right, William in Kansas City, you're on the air with James.
Excellent. Hey, James, how you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, I got a quick sighting for you. I was in the Navy, and I'm a quartermaster. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, huh?
Okay, I was taking readings. It was late one night. We were off the coast of Vieques. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
It's that little island off of Puerto Rico that the military uses as a targeting range.
Oh, there's a lot of sightings there.
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what. We were about 25 miles just west of Vieques Island, and it was late. It was about 3 in the morning, and I was on watch, and of course, quartermaster stand the bridge, and there was a throbbing, it looked like to me, a throbbing blue light underneath the water. It was about a mile away, I guess. And
under the water.
Under the water. And it appeared to pulse in and out. I thought it was a buoy at first. And the closer we got to it, we noticed that it was underwater. And I asked the officer of the deck if there was any kind of submarine contacts, if there was anything under the water there. Nothing was on our charts, and it was very deep water there. And the officer of the deck seemed kind of freaked out about it a little bit. he just kind of shrugged it off. I couldn't even believe it. He was just like, you know, he had talked about it for a second with me, but then he just disappeared, went inside the the top of the ship there, and I just sat there and watched it for a little while, and the watch that was there with me was watching it too, and I got on the ICAS. Are you familiar with that? It's like a heat sensing device. It's for watches. When people fall into the water, man overboard, we can find them really quick, or anything else that delivers heat. And I took a look at what it was underwater there, and it must have been about a half a mile away now, and I could tell that there was some kind of weird disc shape underneath the water. It just the very, very faint outline of it. There was some kind of heat signature it was giving off, and then it appeared to shoot some kind of lightning bolt underwater out of where it was, and the lightning bolt seemed to go underwater and light up these little orbs all around the ship. It was very strange. And they were still pretty far away. And this blue light underwater just kind of faded out, disappeared, but these other little orbs came out of the water. They were all different colors, red and blue and yellow. And then I logged it down in the book. I just, you know, I had to write something about it down. And all at once, they just disappeared. It was very, very strange. I've never seen anything like that before, and I knew
How was your log entry received?
I reported exactly what it was. A strange thing about that, a couple years later, I went back through the log books to find it, and I couldn't find that page.
All right. Well, kind of like the Roswell stuff, that sort of thing has a way of disappearing. This experiment is not over yet. We're going to try the same thing at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to watch the next few days ahead of us, and not only tonight, but the next few days ahead, and we're going to see what happens. And What I'm asking is that as many of you who listen to me and as many of you who believe that there really is something to all of this and that intent really does mean something, and I believe that it does. I surely believe that. I want you at the bottom of the hour to do as you did at the top of the hour and just blast out intent to show themselves in our sky. Now, getting in a good mood and remembering a great a time in your life, putting yourself in an excellent mood is a good idea. But most of all, I want you to blast out intent to show themselves in our skies, and we'll see what happens. Michael in Norfolk, Virginia, you're on the air with James.
Yes, thank you. I'm against this for the following reason. I don't think a reasonable person puts out a message on the internet telling strangers to stop by his house and fill his living room and his bedrooms and so forth. And in the same sense, this is our earthly home, our planetary home. And to put out on the internet of the universe an unspecific invitation to whoever's out there to come on in and make themselves at home is very, very unwise.
You're worried about it, huh?
Well, it's just completely unwise. And I'll tell you, there's another aspect to this. We are told in history that there is one man in history who has demonstrated himself as a mediator between earthlings and heavenly beings, and he is the Messiah of Israel. And if we want intervention, we should ask for that intervention to come in his name, through him, and by him, and not by any other.
Well, we didn't specify any intermediary, Michael. We just asked that we get a show in our skies, and I have this kind of odd feeling that we're going to get it, and I don't think that it's going to be anything all that awful. I think it's just, in fact, what it really already is a bunch of sightings. We're getting all kinds of sightings, so we'll see. We'll see as the next couple of days go on. In Manhattan, Kansas, it's Jeff for James.
Hey, guys. I just want to let you know, first of all, it's about 20 degrees here.
but
I went out, my wife and I, and we had some pretty powerful halogen lights. And I got out there first, and for some reason, a large yellowish white light caught my eye. And I flashed light at it a couple times and hollered at my wife. She walked out the door, and this blue plasma-colored ball shot right over the top of our heads and over our house.
Really?
It was
really
crazy. Yeah.
You're not kidding?
No, I'm not kidding at all.
Wait a minute.
It didn't look like the size of a bowling ball, but it looked like it was only 15 or 20 feet up.
Is your wife available?
Yeah.
Put her on.
Okay, hang on.
You know, all right, they've done that here quite a bit.
Yeah, well, I've got to hear this.
Yeah.
He wants to talk to you.
I'll tell you a story afterwards about that.
All right.
Here, she's in the other room listening to the radio here.
Yeah, that's all right.
Hello.
Hi, and what's your first name?
Shauna.
Shauna. Shauna, yeah. you went out with your husband, and you saw what?
He said he saw something. He yelled at me to come out, and just bright flash. Right, streaked right over the house.
And you saw it. You saw it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't, you know, I don't know if it can ask him if this, you know, like a falling star or a shooting star or something like that, could actually be, you know, could have been a UFO. I don't know. It was pretty amazing.
What did it look like to you, Shauna?
Just a bright white flash.
Moving streak. Or just
it, yeah, moving. It looked like, I mean, it went so fast, it looked kind of like a falling star.
Really?
But I don't know.
All right, Shauna. I want to thank you and your husband. It's really great to have a couple of people on saying the same thing, particularly in an instance like this.
But we listen all the time, and this was just, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
This is amazing.
Shauna, yeah, right.
thank you. Oh, I tell you what, no, hold on. Put your husband back on.
Okay.
It sounds like he saw just a little bit more than Shauna, but Shauna verifies what he saw. So let's get him back on the line. And get ready, because we're going to continue. Hi there.
Hi.
All right, so you apparently saw the first part of this, or in other words, there was enough time for you to call your wife, and she saw the same thing, or what?
The initial thing I saw was huge up in the sky, like it could have been a planet or something. And I flashed my light at it twice, and hollered at her, and within 3 or 4 seconds, that bluish-colored plasma ball shot right over the top of our heads. And the property we own is about 800 feet above the valley surrounding.
All right, buddy, I've got a split. I am sufficiently impressed. All right, we're coming on another break right now. So here's what I want everybody to do. We're not done. This is one of our serious experiments. It's been years since I've done one. Please, take a moment. Remember a joyous moment in your life, and then combine it with all the intent you've got in your mind and soul for something to show itself in our skies. And if you want, go take a look. Intent is focused energy, and we're sending it out right now. With millions of you hanging on it, I'm Art Bell. Here I am. Well, the reports I'm getting are amazing enough now. We'll have to wait and see. This is the power of intent is something that we have that is separate from all else. It's separate from governments. It's separate from the power they have. It's separate from, well, everything. It is a power unto itself, and I firmly believe that it's real. Focused intent for something to show in our skies. We'll watch the next few days very carefully, but the reports coming in are amazing now. Yes, I did get one. Let's see. I saw one here. Yeah, here it is. They want Dave in Moore, Oklahoma, wants me to report that he saw nothing. But that's one out of about 50 so far. You know, only so many of these fast blasts can come through. But there, Dave, I reported that for you. For everybody else, we'll kind of see how it goes as time goes on. It's been a lot of years since I've done one of these experiments, and it's not over yet. James Gilliland, back with you on the phones in a moment. Well, James, here's somebody calling us loons. The both of us, actually. You're a loon, and I'm a close second. Well, I've got a feeling that we're going to produce some results here. I don't know if they're going to happen right away, as many of these fast blasts would indicate, or if it'll be in the next couple of days. My experience with these experiments previously was that in an hour or two, generally, it started to produce results. Now, we'll see. Let's go back to the phones, and first-time caller line, Robert in Stockton, California. You're on with James.
Hi, James. Hi, Art. And the first I wanted to say, Art, I commend you for doing this experiment. I've been praying for a long time that you would do this very experiment. And, yes, us New Agey people, we do believe in the teachings of Jesus. Anyway, I have an experience. Last September, my wife, Charlotte, and I stayed at James's place.
Oh.
And we saw, probably 15 to 20 ships, you know, on average each night that we were there. And the last night that we were there, we had a wonderful night with James and his family, I would say, there. And then we went back to our campground, just my wife and I. And she went into the tent to read, and I laid there in my chair. And I did exactly the experiment we're doing tonight. I laid there with simple, focused intentions, and I thought exactly the way we're doing tonight. Suddenly, right above the ranch, a light flashed. And then it flashed again, and I had a little laser in my pocket. And I pulled the laser out, and I flashed the laser 3 times. The light flashed back 3 times. Well, needless to say, I got pretty excited at that point. So I called to my wife to get the camera. She she came out there, and she handed me the camera, and she was watching. She saw the light flashing, too. I flashed again 3 times. It flashed back 3 times again. So I grabbed the camera, little instant camera, and she was watching the area up there, and I started snapping pictures of that area, and she started getting really excited because she said, whatever was up there flashed at exactly the moment that I was flashing the camera. And I got 2 very nice pictures of something up above the ranch there.
Robert, is that, as we discussed earlier, taking a photograph of a light, no matter how impressive it is to your eye, is never transformed well to a camera. I mean, you're taking a picture of a light against a very dark black velvet sky, basically,
exactly.
With the camera.
You're absolutely
so
right.
So you get a picture of a light.
The only thing that I could say to that, Art, is that I don't care what anybody thinks. It was the experience that I took home, that I felt that something connected with me. It felt my intention, and it tried to communicate back with me. And people can naysay all they want. I have that for my own. And my wife saw it herself with her very eyes. And if I can't recommend this ranch more. James was a wonderful host. This was a great place to stay. If people are in doubt, they need to go visit. Take the opportunity. You know, Seth Shostak from SETI. Go to the ranch. Have a look for yourself. If you devote your life to researching UFOs, this should be the first place you should go.
Robert, I would love nothing more than to send Seth to the ranch. But you probably have to take him shackled. He doesn't really want to look into that sort of thing. And that's why, yes, this experiment makes sense to me. After all, all the experiments I did way back when were intent involved before it became fashionable to do so. And so so many people like James tell me over and over and over again that it is intent. And even when you go out with a flashlight or a laser or something else and shine it back at these things and then they react in some way, that too is intent. It's just a little more active, that's all. So we're not done yet. At the end of the program, I'm going to ask everybody to once again spend several minutes in intense concentration trying to get something to appear in our skies. And
you know, Art, that's what it's all about. Was it Mark or Mike?
Robert.
Oh, it's Robert. Yes. I couldn't hear the name. No.
You may be talking about Robert was the last one on. There was a Mike, and you were going to say something about the blue-colored flash that he saw.
Well, no, the one that just called, I remember
Robert.
Them.
Robert.
They had quite an experience, and they were blown away by it. But the whole important thing about this is personal experience. It's not a matter of trying to prove it to the world. It's the people who really want to have the experience, they come here, and it's theirs. They take it home with them, and that's the only way to do this. It's not a matter of trying to prove it to the disbelievers or the skeptics or the debunkers. People come here and they have their own personal experience, and it's real for them.
I know, and you can't, and there's no way that will be taken away from that person, as I had my very, very close-up sighting. People can doubt all they want. I know what I saw. Vince in Seattle, Washington, you're on with James.
Art, it's a pleasure. Number one, I'd like to say something to Art and then ask a question of James.
Sure.
Art, number one, I would like to see this experiment done again, but I would hope that you could do a live remote on a Saturday and Sunday night at the sanctuary and have people actually focus their attention on the sanctuary itself to see what might happen. I would think that would be very, very interesting.
Well, indeed. I'm sure it would.
You're welcome anytime, Art. George, too.
James, hi. My name is Vince. My son and I, we both went to the conference last August. I was the guy that wore the dark glasses. You have a beautiful picture of me on your website under the orbs.
Okay, great.
Orbs are everywhere around there. It's just a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
The question I have, though, James, is that I know that you'll be going with Brooks on this expedition to the North Pole later this year in September, October, I understand.
Really?
And now, are you going to have another conference there this summer prior to that expedition?
You know, we are. We're having another major conference July 6th through 8th. And actually, Brooks is going to be one of the speakers and quite a few others. We have a really good lineup.
Are you going to the North Pole, James?
You know, I haven't completely decided yet. They want me to go as kind of a, you know, one of the people to, you know, tap into the beings to gain entrance. So I've been contemplated. I was invited to go. We'll see how it all turns out. A lot has to do with the funding that Brooks Agnew is trying to get together. He has a Russian ship. It's an icebreaker that has the ability to go all the way there.
Yeah.
You know, it has the fuel capacity and everything else. But Dr. Sala was with Exopolitics is also involved. There's several other people that are all invited to go, and we'll just see how it pans out.
Okay, we'll see what happens. Tracy in Minnesota, you're on with James Gilliland. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Art. This is a definite honor. First of all, I just want to let you know that I did go outside, and it's really foggy out here in Minnesota, and so I was like, oh, I'm probably not going to see much. But what I did notice, and it wasn't anything very, very, like, definite, but it was, like, bright sprinkles in my peripheral. And it was kind of weird because I thought it was the snow, but it was way, way up. And it was just like it kept blinking. And so I don't know. But I do have a question for James.
Yes.
Okay, you mentioned really early on in the interview about somebody getting beamed with a light in their chest area.
Yeah.
Well, I had a dream about a month ago, and I've never, ever, ever had any dreams about any UFOs or any type of alien type of dreams. And I just found that it was vivid, it was real, but it was me and a bunch of people, and we were underneath this UFO, and it was hovering, and I was watching everybody line up to go position themselves under some sort of area for them to get beamed, and this light just went right in the chest, and it would bring them to their knees,
mm-hmm.
And then when it was my turn to, like, get this beam of light in my chest, I had felt this, like, telepathic message. I didn't hear words, but it was telepathic, and it was just like, we don't need to give it to you. You already have it inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just baffled. I just wanted to know if you have anything to say about that, what you think that is.
Well, you know, I actually got beamed in the chest myself, and three golden balls of energy came down, and it left a burn mark on my chest.
Oh, my gosh.
But Brooks Agnew, Dr. Agnew also was here, and he had a very similar experience, and they're completely life-changing.
Wow.
And there's an incredible transference of consciousness and energy, and after the experience, I had full memory of much of my past, you know, past lives, and some of them weren't even on this planet. And so, you know, it completely changed my life when I had the experience.
What do you think that's saying when I dream it, but I didn't have the physical experience like you, because I've never even heard of that.
You know, it could be a recall, like a past recall. It could be an interdimensional experience where you went out of body and had an experience.
Okay.
There's many, many different ways that could have unfolded.
Wow. Okay, cool. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy, and take care. I believe from San Francisco, California, it's Angela. Hi.
Thank you, and many, many blessings, much love to Art and James and everyone out there.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask James to please clarify what he means by plasma and plasma ships. I'll give a little bit of background. Back in 2003, I saw the astronauts on the Columbia ship, either in a dream or some type of out-of-body experience, and they were watching something. When I woke up, that's when I heard about the explosion and the loss, so I've been trying to figure that out ever since, and I'd like to hear James' thoughts on plasma and if that was at all connected, or what he thinks happened to those astronauts in Columbia.
I don't think it had a connection with the plasma ships because they're extremely benevolent beings. They're some of them that are on these golden ships
come from Orion. It's like an Orion Council of Light, and J.J. Hurtak talks quite a bit about those. They're in the Bible as well. They talk about the Orion and Pleiades system. So, you know, going back to one of the other callers, you know, they assume that we're not connected, you know, to God or Jesus or the other masters, but it's all connected, and we need to drop this division, you know, and start thinking in unity consciousness, not this polarity consciousness that we're working under. But you know, I really don't see any connection other than some faulty equipment, you know, with the shuttle and possibly, you know, who knows, something else might have happened on that. But I know one thing is that one of the shuttles was taking up a secret military payload, and you know, that's kind of a no-no, you know, in space. So so something could have happened there. You know, I'm
something
not sure exactly what happened.
All right. Mary in New York City, you're on with James.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Yeah, first, hi, Art, James, and thank you for another great show. I think we can all remember the first time we heard your show, because that's the last time any of us got any good sleep. But,
thank you.
Yeah, I got a quick kind of, I guess, UFO sighting and then two questions if I can.
Okay.
This was during the afternoon, and I was on the Long Island Railroad, kind of coming in from Queens into Penn Station, so kind of hovering over Northwest Queens. There were two very unusual clouds. Now, they weren't like any other, you know, amorphous, you know, clouds. They were kind of, they were shaped like if you looked at the side of a Snickers bar, you know, kind of long rectangle, and there was kind of one above the other. And they were very unusual coloration, like pinkish, brownish. And suddenly the top one just disappeared.
Mm.
It, within like 3 seconds, it faded to nothing. And, hello?
Yes, we're listening.
Oh, I don't know if you're still with me. Yeah, it was just very unusual because within a matter of a couple seconds, the top one just disappeared.
And yeah, there have been a lot of cloud-type sightings that are pretty weird, and I've seen some pretty strange clouds myself. You had a couple of questions?
Oh, yeah. Well, quickly, if these aliens are, you know, so benevolent, and if they're able to intervene and, you know, you think they would prevent a nuclear exchange, why have they let so many nuclear experiments go on so that, you know, these missile silos are even developed, you know, if they can intervene to dismantle them? Why do they even let the test and that kind of thing go on in the first place? And, you know, I'm kind of lost in that train of thought. If there's a
in other words, why let it get this far? They've had lots of years to intervene.
I think the main thing is that they can't interfere with our evolutionary process, and there are certain places where they can intervene to help us to continue to evolve. But some of the things we have to gain the wisdom through experience, they can't come in and just do everything for us. We have to clean up our consciousness and learn from some of the mistakes we make. So it's a very fine line on how much, you know, rope we can, you know, they're going to give us, because, you know, we're pretty much at the end of the rope right now, where we're very close to destroying our environment. We're very close to, you know, moving into a nuclear war. Things are a mess down here, and we've pushed it to the limit. So I think that's why they're coming right now, because we've just pretty much hit the limit of how far we can go.
All right. First time caller line, Joe in Florida.
Hi, Art. Hi, James. Great show. Long time listener. I got a quick story. When I was 9 years old, I was residing in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And my mother called me home from my friend's house, and it was about 5-6 in the evening. And as I was walking in the front of the house, I heard a humming noise, a deep, low hum.
Mm-hmm.
I did circles and looked around and didn't see anything, and I decided to look up, and there was a metallic craft hovering over me about 60 to 75 feet. And I looked up, and there was two beings looking at me through the windows. There was two windows, and it was all yellow light in the background. And the beings, I couldn't make out any facial features, but they were just all black. And the heads were larger, like the gray, sort of. And then another being came in the window, and they exchanged something in their hands, and they all three looked at me at once.
Joe, I hate to do it to you, but our program is over. I have to go. James, I want to thank you for being here.
I want to address
the audience very quickly. We'll do another show soon, but this will be quite a night, James, I guarantee.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Good night, my friend. And listen, everybody, let's do it again right now. As the program ends, remember a good time in your life, a joyous time in your life, and then attach to it a very strong intent for them to show themselves in our skies. Can't say we didn't try. Let's give it a really good shot right now. Good night.